Good morning, friends. Good morning, all of you. Good morning to Lou.
Good morning.
How you doing, Lou?
I'm doing well so far. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. Well, we're continuing, friends, with chapter 18. And we're going to be doing in this episode verses 48, 49, and 50. So it's a continuation of what we did in the last two episodes, but it's because it's so important. And Krishna keeps saying again and again that do what comes naturally to you. So verse 48 says, one should not give up the karma that comes naturally to oneself, even though it may not be perfect. Because all undertakings, all actions, all karmas are covered with fault, just like fire is covered with smoke. So he said this in the previous few episodes, in the previous few verses. But here he's put in a little twist, and that is that all karmas are covered with fault, which means, and he analogizes it to fire being covered with smoke. And that is an interesting concept because it leads us to the next few verses. What does that mean? Karma is covered with fault. All action is covered with fault, just like fire is covered with smoke. So just like we've discussed in the past that our previous lives give us certain impressions. Whatever you've liked in previous lives comes with you to the current life. And that forms your vasanas, your likes, your desires, your dislikes. You come right from early childhood with certain things. And mothers say, fathers say, grandfathers say, oh, my child doesn't like this. Well, how does she know? I mean, she just was born recently. How does she know what she likes and dislikes? It's because of previous impressions. So just like your nature, your personality, and your vasanas, all of which we've discussed in detail previously, so I'm not going to repeat it here. What he's saying in this verse is that your actions, your karma, is also born along with these swabhava. The swabhava means your personality, what you've brought with you from previous lives. You're born with a certain personality, right? We say, this child is so peaceful compared to my earlier child who was just crying all the time. This child is very peaceful. So that's your swabhava. That's your nature. That's your personality. And he's saying that that nature, that personality, although it comes with its likes and dislikes, raga, dvesha, it comes with its personality, it comes with its vasanas, he's saying even the actions that that child, that man, that woman, as he, she gets older, is going to perform, those actions are coming from previous likes, dislikes, and drives and vasanas. How come? And we'll talk about that. But briefly, you know, he's saying actions come from desires. So if you have desires from a previous life, those desires are going to prompt certain actions. Why? Because I have a desire to make money, suppose. That's my biggest, suppose that's my biggest drive in life. Then my actions are going to be driven towards making money. So my actions, therefore, have been determined by my previous lives and my life. So he's saying your karma, you're born with it, just like your swabhava, your personality, your nature, you're born with it. So your karma is also born along with the swabhava that you have. And Krishna says, even if you find some defect in what you're doing, if that is your nature, don't give it up. So I've said to you, all of you in the audience before, that my swabhava, my personality, I have always had this desire and nature to study the scriptures. When my wife pointed out to me that this was going on at the temple and I should go and listen to it, I reluctantly went, but it was like I glommed onto it in the first episode that I heard. I said, this is it. This is my life's calling. And so I didn't glom like that to medicine in medical school. I didn't go towards a field in medicine that had to do with blood or surgery or anything like that. I again went to something where I could talk, psychiatry, talk, listen, and help people. So that was my swabhava. And I may have been a better psychiatrist, a better physician, even though that might have not been my calling or my going against the with the grain, I might have been a great physician compared to how I am as a teacher of the scriptures. Maybe I'm not so good. But Krishna says, even if you find some defect in what you feel, it comes naturally. Krishna says, express it. Express your karma, your desire, in the best possible way. Don't give it up. So the world gives you an opportunity, gives all of us an opportunity for all beings to express themselves in millions of ways. You'll find some way to express yourself. Express yourself in music, in academia, in whatever it is that is your calling. Some people love to, their heart is set on singing or dancing or music or, fighting. They want to be martial arts experts, and their parents say, no, you can't fight. You have to go to college. And so do whatever you think is your calling. Krishna says every action has its defects, but in spite of that, every action is important. You must do action. You cannot go for a second in your life without acting, except when you're in deep sleep or in sleep. Krishna says every guna has its defects. Even sattva has defects, just like fire is associated with smoke. So the formula that you have to remember is that each one of us has vasanas. Those come to us from previous lives. Those vasanas, when they want to be put into action, go in this manner. A vasana produces a thought. So using the same example of a person who's driven to make money, the vasana results in a thought to say, if I did this, I would get some money. That thought then incurs another thought, then another thought. And those thoughts keep coming again and again to say, hey, I had that idea of making money by doing X, Y, and Z. Those thoughts coalesce together from being a small little rivulet or a stream into a bigger stream, and then a river. And those river of thoughts is known as a desire. First, a small desire to say, yeah, I could put that thought into action and make some money. Then the desire gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it becomes almost like an obsession. But at any point, once it becomes a desire, you will do the action that that thought created. So the action is then to fulfill the desire. So remember this, vasanas produce thoughts, thoughts produce desires produce the action. And the action is as a result of desire. Now, without desire, there can be no action, right?
Right.
You won't act if you don't have any desire. So therefore, all actions have to have desire behind it. That's very important. Desire is considered in every religion, every culture, desire is what is considered to be evil, sinful. It produces sin, meaning it produces a reaction back on you. You do something and then you have the effect, your mental agitation because you did it. And all religions say that desire is the one that is considered the devil, the Satan, the Shaitan, the Maru. All of these desires are evil, faulty, according to all religions. So what Krishna says is, you have an action to do, which is prompted by desire, which means, he says, all actions have desire, all actions have evil, all actions have Satan behind it. Therefore, he says, just like fire has smoke in it, all actions have desire in it. Arjuna says on the battlefield, what I'm doing, what I'm going to be doing, killing my own cousins, my own relatives, is evil. It's sinful. It's bad. And Krishna says to him, there is no action that is exempt from evil. No action that is exempt from desire. And he says, just like fire contains smoke inherently, actions contain desires. You can't get away from that, he tells Arjuna. So the other thing he says is that as fire keeps burning incessantly, at some point the smoke stops coming. The fire stops producing smoke. Obviously, the fire may be a little wet, the wood may be a little wet, and the wet wood produces smoke. As the fire keeps going, the wood gets drier. Once it gets dry, the smoke stops. You've seen that in fireplaces. So as the fire keeps burning, the smoke disappears. And as you keep doing your swadharmic dharma, swadharmic action, that is that action that comes naturally to you, that is your swadharma. If you keep doing it over and over and over again, your desires, your evil disappears. Your desire disappears as you keep doing what is rightfully something that you ought to do. Krishna says to Arjuna, you are a kshatriya. You must fight. You must, you know, do your duty. You have to protect your nation. You've been assigned to do a duty to say you must protect your nation. Do what is right. And it doesn't matter who the enemy is. If you've been appointed to be a soldier, you have to fight. You're a policeman. You go because somebody called you to say these are all terrorists attacking. And then you find that the terrorists are people that you're very close to. You know, you can't say, well, I'm putting my gun down because these guys, I know them from childhood. No, these are terrorists. You have to pick up the gun. You have to fight. What Krishna also says is dedicate your actions to the Supreme. Just like we've said many times before, whatever you do, if you just say this is my action, not for me, not for mine, but for the Supreme, thus you remove your desires, you get closer to self-realization, the smoke that is in the fire disappears. Now, that was the last one that we talk about where we're saying that you have to do what is your nature. Now comes verse 49. A person who has conquered his own self, who has no desires, whose mind is not attached to anything in this world, he attains the position of actionlessness because of renunciation. Actionlessness means you have no action. You don't do anything. You can sit in the mountains as a hermit without doing anything other than just meditating. Why? Because you've renounced. Renounced what? Renounced your attachment to the world. Renounced your attachment. Therefore, you have less desires or no desires. When you have no desires, you don't need to act, as we said before. No vasanas, therefore no thoughts, therefore no desires, therefore no action. Actionlessness. As you keep doing your swadharma, you drop your vasanas and your desires. You're able to exert more control over your desires and your senses. That's an important thing. Your sense organs, your organs of action, keep wanting expression. It says, I need this, I want this. Those 10 organs keep demanding. And as you become focused on the higher ideal, the lower desires automatically fall off. As you become attached to the higher ideal, your lower desires automatically fall off. You don't have to do anything. Gautamji used to give us examples again and again of a child who's attached to his marbles or his toys. As he gets older, no matter how much you tell him when he was a child, give up your marbles, they're worthless. No, he's clinging to them as if it's for dear life. But once he gets attached to something else, like a bicycle, immediately his desire for the lower, the marbles, drops off. You don't need to tell him anything. He just loses interest in it. So Krishna says, similarly, as you get attached to the higher ideal of the Supreme and good deeds, if you don't, if you cannot conceptualize getting attached to the higher, if you just do good deeds, do what comes naturally, do your swadharma, the lower desires fall off. It leads automatically to renunciation. Your attachment to the world starts to dissipate. Therefore, your action is without desire. You're not doing it because you want something. You're doing it because you ought to do it. At least as far as the field in which you're doing this work, you have no desires. So keep doing it, and ultimately you'll get complete renunciation where you'll be free of vasanas, free of desires, and free of action. Now, verse 50, Krishna says, listen, I'll tell you briefly. The word briefly is key here. Listen, I'll tell you briefly. Also learn from me how a person who has reached a state of perfection reaches Brahman, which is the supreme abode of knowledge. So the key word here is briefly. Why does he say briefly? Because he says, I've repeated this many, many times throughout the book, throughout the Gita. I've said it. So I'll tell it to you again, but I'll tell it to you briefly. And what he does here is he enumerates a number of different qualities, which we'll do in the next episode, which are very important. But a person who is pure of mind through doing his duty, his natural duty and he becomes pure of mind by giving up his vasanas, by giving up his desires. How can he recognize Brahman is the question. But what does pure of mind mean? Pure of mind means he has no ego, no me, 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 no I, no raga, dvesha, I like this, I don't like this. He's not ignorant of things. He's very knowledgeable about the subtle knowledge, which is the scriptures, not just physics, math, and chemistry. This kind of spiritual knowledge, he's no longer ignorant. He understands it. He has no kama, krodha, lobha, mada, matsarya. All of those things, those qualities that we spoke about, the anger, the jealousy, the arrogance, all of that is gone. And he develops a happy, peaceful mind. Happy, peaceful mind. Recognize that we right now are the servants, the slaves of our minds, each one of us. Our mind says, do this. And we may try to ignore it once or twice, but the mind always wins. Mm-hmm. The mind is our boss. We have to control it. The mind should not be our boss. The mind is your instrument, not your boss. Your mind tells you something and inevitably the mind wins because the mind has nothing but desires in it, nothing but negative qualities in it. And the mind says, do this, do this, do this, and you keep doing it. So by doing your dharma, by doing what you ought to do, slowly, slowly, slowly over years, but it'll happen where you get rid of these, the control, you develop the control over your mind because make it no longer your boss, but make it your instrument. Don't forget, tattvamasi, aham brahmasmi. You are Brahman. Within, you are Brahman. You are completely covered. So you don't recognize the Brahman. What are you covered with? Your ignorance. Hmm. What are you covered with? Your negativity, your I-ness, mindness. This is me, me, all of your ego. Once you recognize this, you get there by removing the impurities of the mind. Last episode or the episode before that, we spoke about a sculptor who sees a big stone block of granite. And he says, in this block of granite, I visualize a sculpture that I'm going to make. And then he starts chipping away the stone until he gets that figure that he's looking for. Similarly, you should recognize the Brahman within you. It's covered by negativity, by ignorance, by the I-ness, my-ness, my ego. Get there by removing those impurities from your mind. Don't let the mind be your boss. Let it be your instrument. Clean it. How? And this is what Krishna says. I'll tell you how to do it. How? I'll tell you briefly. Why briefly? Because of what we said, that he's told us before. But in the next episode, I'll tell you in verses 51, 52, and 53, Krishna tells us how to do this. The next three verses, 51, 52, 53, give 12 values of how to do this. Recognize these 12 values, read up on it, make notes on it, imbibe them, meditate, and that you get to self-realization. These qualities have already been discussed in chapter 13, where he gives 20 qualities of a wise man. If you remember, you can go back and look at that. But we'll do this in our next episode. Lou, any comments, questions? I think this has been a short episode today.
Yeah, it's been a short episode, but important points. We're leading up to a bigger point, which I think it's important to do this groundwork before we get to the bigger point, because we're preparing ourselves for an instrument we need to get closer to spirituality, right?
Right, absolutely. Yep. So friends, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time.